unlock the future of learning. This is Franklin Unlimited, where visionary ideas come to life.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Franklin Unlimited. I'm your host, Will Campbell, founding head of school at Franklin School in Jersey City, where we're redefining what education can be for the next generation of thinkers, creators, and leaders. In this podcast, we explore the bold ideas, groundbreaking programs, and inspiring individuals that are shaping the future of learning. Today, we're excited to welcome Danny Bauer, founder of Better Leaders, Better Schools, host of the top-ranked podcast by the same name, and author of the BLBS Roadmap. A former teacher and principal, Danny now coaches school leaders around the world, who he calls ruckus makers, to challenge the status quo, lead with purpose, and create school cultures where both adults and students can thrive. In this conversation, we'll explore what it means to lead with courage, how adult experiences shape student outcomes, and why small shifts in leadership and mindset can make a big difference in high schools today. Whether you're an educator, a parent, or a school leader, this episode is full of practical insight, honest reflection, and more. Let's dive in. So Danny, welcome to Franklin Unlimited. Great to have you on the show.
Well, it is my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for hosting me.
Of course. I'm so excited to dive into a number of different things. I really love your approach. I love listening to your podcast. So I think it's going to be a great listen for the people that listen to our podcast. But if you could, for those people that listen that might not know who you are, if you could give us a little bit of a high-level exec summary of who you are, what you do, and where you've come from, it would be great.
You know, I want to set expectations too, Will. They say that the secret to happiness actually is extremely low expectations.
Yeah.
And therefore, right, if you just do a little bit more than that, it's like, wow, this was really time well spent. So let's start there just in case. I like to say that back in the day, I'm waiting for my friend Lindsay to pick me up for high school. She's my best friend. Our parents grew up together. And so we are definitely tied since we were both born. And the thing with Lindsay, she's the last of three girls and she's a princess. The world revolves around her. And so she really doesn't pay attention to time. Time is meaningless to her. And even though school starts at 8 o'clock, it doesn't start at 8 o'clock for Lindsay. And she's my ride to high school, Will. So this is like really stressful. And I like doing well. I like getting good grades, not being in trouble. But I've been late to Mr. Rogers' chemistry class so many times. I know if I'm late again, I'm going to get suspended. This is it. This is the last straw for me. And so I'm looking, it's 7:45, looking out the bay window, no sign of Lindsay. Okay. 7:55, I'm starting to get a little more worried, but I know her. And so I open my door. I start walking down the street as if that will beckon her to come quickly. It does not. I make it down to Anderson Park. And finally, just flying down, probably 50 in a 25, absolutely ridiculous. She's just driving nuts and screeching the tires. She picks me up. It's already 8:05. We're late, but I don't want to walk to school. I don't want to ride my bike because I'm lazy and I want to go with Lindsay. And we listen to Nine Inch Nails or Green Day and Nirvana on the way to school. So we get to school. I'm toast. I knock on the door because Mr. Roger locks his door if you're late. And he comes and he says, Mr. Bauer, late again. I said, yes, but this time, Mr. Rogers, it's different. All right, Danny, tell me why. And I said, listen, I know I've been late a lot. Like, I own that. I'm really sorry. I've learned from my mistakes. This time was different because on my way to school, there was a house on fire. And that house, it was filled with Girl Scouts. I had a choice. What would you do, Mr. Rogers, if you walked past a house filled with Girl Scouts and it was on fire? Obviously, you do everything in your power to save the troop. And, Will, I don't know if it was the very made-up story that I told Mr. Rogers or the very real do-si-do, which is a peanut butter Girl Scout cookie. I don't know if you've ever had that. It's legendary. But I gave him that cookie. I got off scot-free. And since then, I learned that it pays to tell good stories. So that's me in a nutshell.
And I can honestly say we could have taken the rest of the 45 minutes and just had that story kind of unravel. The funny part from that as well is I get those stories every single day. I'm yet to receive a Girl Scout cookie, but I have some doozies myself, some of those talented storytellers.
Yeah. Suspend them. Throw the book at them. They need to bring some props. Come on. They got to work for it.
But it tends to be like that story that you're talking about. is also something I think will lead to some really good conversations today, is about students owning things, creating an ecosystem and a culture where a student like that, you've got to give them a little leeway in certain sections because they might reward you in spades in other areas. So that creative nature could be the fantastic drama student that brings the entire school together. And all of a sudden you've got a performance that's memorable for life. And so storytelling for me is really super important. But I'm going to shift and actually almost take the point that you said is like suspending, get him out, is going to the principal side of your experience. So the leadership side and the conversations around culture. And I was going to give you like an easy layup question to start with, but I'm going to just give you one straight off the cuff.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, if you were a founding head of school right now, and that was your position that you were given, you haven't opened the doors, you've just got the keys, what are two things that you would implement in a school right now that would be non-negotiable?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's kind of like the question I asked my guests, right? Building their dream school type of thing.
Yeah.
Non-negotiables, wow, in just two, that's a good constraint. I love when guests, and I think I'll answer too, like quality of people. And let me ask you, Will, in this thought experiment, am I under all the same type of rules too that schools exist within?
Well, I think go more around the non-conservative model. So those that have a little bit more autonomy, they have some freedom. Kind of going back to your question, right? If you could create the perfect school, in order to do that, you can't have the red tape in every single spot. So just imagine that the red tape is just the surroundings of the building and the responsibilities of the people in it, but everything else from it, make the best situation possible. Let's go with no parameters.
Yeah, quality people, 100%. And I love teachers. I mean, I was a teacher. And I think you should get trained and learn about the child development and learning and all that kind of stuff, for sure. But as I've gotten older, as I've run my own business, as I've sort of been in that ecosystem as well, everybody talks about like all the winning organizations, they hire good people, quality people, and they teach them the rest. And so I think we probably lack a lot of people outside of education just because they might not have the right credentials. So quality people would be one. And then I would see how much of the school experience, you said there was a sort of boundary. I would see how much of the experience we could actually host school and measure learning outcomes and all that outside of the building as possible. So that would be interesting. My team would help me figure it out. Hopefully I'd be the stupidest person in the room. I'd really try to hire for that.
Yeah.
And just have all stars around me where I could ask curious questions and empower people to be great and get out of their way. So I think those would be my two.
Nearly every single podcast is some kind of goosebump moment I get. And that's that one.
Did you ever get one like 5 minutes in, Will, or am I the earliest goosebump moment?
I reckon you got to be. I got goosebumps because I was waiting to see where that story was going to go to begin with.
It's up there.
So I actually had that really early, but this one got me. And I agree wholeheartedly. And that's one of the things that I've been incredibly fortunate to do, is to have that landscape, like go create the best possible place you can for students, for parents, and for teachers. The hard part is obviously people. At the same time, is like good people are great, but lots of people also bring lots of different stuff. But the other part that I agree with wholeheartedly, and it's something that we've really tried to do, and I think this is an area that you and I, if we were to have a beer or a coffee together, we'd probably sit around for ages, not necessarily debating, but trying to work out, is so much of the parameters on a student's experience are dictated by where the next journey is. And the college journey is very much restricted to particular parameters of subjects, the amount of time on seat, so many things that are restricting that external influence. We've been really creative, and you were talking about having an all-star team. I've been really fortunate to have that as well, is that to be creative and to not lose sight of the rigor that everyone wants to see, but expose students to the real world with the real, correct, passionate people to do it. And you just see kids become adults very quickly, but in the right way, not because you're forcing them into a box, but they're actually walking towards responsibilities, accountability, and then they're also understanding deeper processes. And I just want to dive into that. Every time I hear one of your podcasts, I read something, a lot of it is so much about human connection and human endeavor. That's that idea of right people, great community, great communication, et cetera. And so I'd love to dive into that bit a little bit more and go into what do you think we can do in schools better to be able to retain the best people? Because the best people tend to be the ones that get identified. They get identified and they get given more work. They get given more work with maybe a little bit more money, but not necessarily more time. And so do you have any ideas around how to hold those people, how to create more of that energy and engagement that's so integral in an education setting.
So there's a lot of things I want to say to this. One would be minimize the suck and the boring aspects and just the bureaucracy and that kind of stuff. I come from a public sort of background. So there's that piece. I like to say that staff members really want to know two answers to two questions. And if you can answer those affirmatively, then they will stick around. And the questions are, am I doing a good job and do I belong here? And so just figuring out how can you constantly communicate, you're doing great, Will. Like, you're such a valuable part of the team and your contributions, da, da, da. And like the belonging piece, people will want to stick around. But then, man, it's been so long since I read Dan Pink's Drive, but I know like agency, right, and creativity and that kind of stuff is really important. So to me, it's like, how do you, again, resource really talented people to be their best? I just had somebody on my show. Actually, no, it was just a connect call. But this principal, I'll just say she's out in California in like Silicon Valley area. And she was saying how much fire she takes because there's a legit teacher doing innovative, great stuff, getting kids to really think. And the parents can get upset because it's not the traditional route, which is really interesting. And two, the students get upset as well because they just want to know, how do I get the A? They just want to fall in line and do the thing instead of figure out who they are and how to think and how to express themselves and to fail and to learn from failure and all this kind of stuff. And I found that so fascinating that the students pushed back as well. But she protects this teacher because she knows this is where we need to be going with education. And I think many leaders that I call play it safe principals would buckle at the pressure from parents, students, and I'd have to assume from central office as well, saying, what are you doing, right? Now, on our website, we love to talk about innovation, but you're doing it? What are you doing? And that hypocrisy exists. So if you could remove that baloney and be about it and empower people to do it, I think that'd be a really fun place to work.
I think one thing is you've got to come and visit the school at some stage. We've got to try and organize that.
I'd love to, yeah.
You would lose your mind with some of the people that I have.
I've already lost it.
Well, you'd be able to re-find it and then you'd lose it again. And I also want to find some way for us to connect to that principal. Love to talk shop with her as well because, again, our school is built for that. That's how this whole Franklin school came to fruition, was the idea of almost those two points that you just spoke about. And one in particular is, yeah, it's so true. I was just getting gray hairs before I took on this job. And I would say the majority of the gray hairs come from largely the battle between contemporary best practice and then holding on to tradition that is not built for purpose anymore. And if you think education has been around for a long time, and in most schools, you and I could pick up our backpacks and we could go into any school, sit in the room, and it would feel exactly the same. We just look a little bit older. But there's almost no infrastructure or industry in the world where that's actually the case. And so it is hard. It's hard because the battle is, if I do these and I do them well and I get these grades and I also do some kind of co-curricular, I open myself up to the top 25s.
Yeah.
But then the battle and the argument is, if we can get you to the top 25s, thinking like the way that we've taught you to think and you being able to be agile and resilient in real world scenarios under real pressure, you will be the person that's not wearing the hoodie. You'll be the person that's leading the conversations, that will be starting to create projects. And so that's a real hard one. And I think it's something that, because education isn't uniform and each country has their own philosophy and each state has their own regulations, it does lend itself to a lot of people talking about what could be rather than what should be. And so it kind of goes into, schools are intentionally systems. They try to create these systems so that if I get replaced, the next person that comes in doesn't have to learn everything that we've done. It's just like, do this at this time to this level using this document and you'll be fine. And so I'd love to get your ideas on leadership in particular, and how we can maybe create a better environment for leaders by taking away the infrastructure and the challenges of historical approaches to education and putting to new ones is, how do you think we solve that? Because the sad part is, most of the time, policy around education doesn't involve educators. and the people that are in the room haven't experienced the challenge of teaching 30 kids with learning difficulties, or 30 kids that don't want to be at school, or 30 kids that are all high performing and you've got to tailor to them all. So what do you think would be a great approach from either a national or international level of trying to help great leaders create better schools?
A lot of the support that I give school leaders that I lovingly call ruckus makers, a lot of it is mindset and performance sort of coaching. And I also realize, like many of the frameworks that I've created, they always start with the individual leader first because they're that lead domino. Then there's usually some sort of team layer, and then it's the system. So you always start individually first. My point of view is that ruckus makers do school different. And like the elevator pitch for that idea is, how do we reimagine the project of education within traditional settings that exist? The policy gets made. But this is most important, listen to these words, so that we create campus experiences worth showing up for. And so that's the prime piece there, creating that experience that adults and kids want to be a part of. But to your point in terms of like supporting leaders and that mindset piece, I don't know. I think this is kind of a radically simple idea, but whenever I share it, leaders, yeah, it's like they heard it for the first time. But I let them know everything doesn't have to have an A effort. But many people that rise to some sort of quote unquote leadership position have worked really hard and hustled and are super duper smart. And those skills might have got them to the seat, but then the seat requires different, right? You can't just like put in more hours, more effort. That'll just kill you. And it doesn't necessarily create great results. I love to tell people, think about that. What requires A effort, and then what's B, C, D, even F effort? There are things, and there's stuff that you're asked to do or whatever, and nobody's ever going to look at it. So why are you pouring so much time into it? So I think that's a key piece. Another part would just be like, don't take stuff so personally. You could tell how like serious a guy I am, you know what I mean? And for better or worse, that can have flaws as well. But I really try to show up in spaces not taking myself so seriously. I already know I've had whatever levels of success, and just being a white guy, I have a lot of privilege. And so that helps level the playing ground in spaces that I occupy. But by not taking stuff so personally and seriously all the time, there is stuff obviously to take seriously. It gives you better perspective. Not to be like super down, but I think about the finiteness of our lives a lot. And that's a Stoic sort of philosophy type of thing. And it just really zooms in and helps keep perspective on stuff. Because what you're holding on to so tightly and is like ruining your day or whatever, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal. I love this conversation. I've enjoyed the times that we've connected. But 50 years, 100 years, 200 years, who's listening to this? Probably nobody. So let's just have fun while we're doing this and give the best we can in this moment and then be available for what comes after that.
Yeah, I think the key part was the first section of that where you were talking about the value or the excitement of getting someone to show up for a reason. Creating an environment where people want to do things and people actually see value in it. And then the additional work and things like that, it doesn't actually feel like work. It feels like you're adding something to your life and that one moment is so worthwhile. And we talk about it a lot here of creating an environment where people either continue to love learning or they fall back in love with learning. And that can be anyone. It could be a staff member, faculty member, and most particularly our students. The reason I like listening to all your stuff and the reason that I think you're also really successful is the seriousness comes through in the planning and the thought process of what you're doing, but you create a really engaging, approachable, and enjoyable environment to go through those conversations. So it's not like your conversations and the stuff you're talking about is not serious, because you're setting leaders up for success and you're also just creating an ecosystem for people to be a little bit easier on themselves. In my role in particular, I've worked across the real traditional, super academically focused. Well-being is absolutely integral, but it's a byproduct. And the reason it's so robust is because it's needed due to the academic rigor and the challenge for the students. And then I've also been in some places where the autonomy is so significant that teachers don't function that well without some kind of framework in it. And I think it's, again, going back to that idea of the reason that I think you love what you do and the reason that I love what I do is the fact that we can have some kind of influence on someone else's life. I get the real sense that you really focus on that idea of trust, especially on when you're building rapport with people, is you let them in and you give them insight, but you also give people insight to yourself. But Trust for me is such a reoccurring thing in school, and it's very hard in leadership when you've got decisions to make about a school and decisions to make about people. And that sometimes, even though you don't see that trust as being damaged, it can also be damaged purely because you are held to a particular decision you have to make compared to maybe what your heart is telling you that you want to make. And I just actually had a conversation with a leader about how important it is to just lead with a moral compass and lead with heart, because you know that most likely that decision will be right. But then the challenge of that decision going against what really the policy might be or the expectations of that traditional model. And so I'd love to just get your take on trust, how important it is in leadership, what kind of strategies can a leader implement in order to maintain trust? And then also the other thing is kind of like trusting yourself as a leader. What kind of things can a leader do to go, I've got this, the conversation that I'm making is actually going to be successful? How is trust integral and what do you think about it?
Okay. Yeah, I will get to that. I want to say one thing on performance, but I'll get to trust. But one thing with performance I just thought was important to bring up is just what's within and outside of your control. And that's also one way to keep people around, because I think when I find people spinning out, they're really focused on the stuff that's out of their control versus what they can do. And this actually relates to trust, because I think almost everything I teach, I try to like boil it down into its most simple form. And so trust is literally just doing what you say you'll do. Just do that, you're going to be fine. You're going to thrive as a leader. And I think where people get in trouble, maybe it's people pleasing, or they just don't feel good saying no at times. And so they say yes to stuff that if they listen to their body and their intuition, they don't want to do it. And they're probably not going to do it. And then they don't do it. And then the story becomes, this guy doesn't like me, or he's out to get me, da, da, da. So just do what you say you're going to do. Trust in yourself. Where did I learn this tool? It was in a book called The Confident Mind by Dr. Nate Zinser. He just has you journal on what he calls ESP, I think. So like, how was today? Where did I put in effort? Where did I see progress? And what was a success from today? It takes less than 3 minutes. And I prescribe that a lot for leaders to do at the end of the day. And what they end up doing is they build this sort of library of winning things. And we all have that negative voice that says, you're no good, you suck, da, da, da. But if you've been building out the ESP journal and look back at it, you could see, oh, actually, I don't suck. I've done a lot of great stuff in, again, 3 minutes or less a day. Trust in people. So do what you say you're going to do. The other thing too is a lot of leaders, when I'm coaching them, they're like, I want this thing to happen. I need to get people to do this thing. And we're talking about like influence. And I'll stop folks in their tracks because I'll say, all right, let's pretend, Will, that you're on my staff or this person I'm coaching staff. I'll say, do you know what Will wants? And the answer is no. No, I don't. I says, well, let's flip the model around a little bit. It's a tool I call the ripple effect tool. But think about, let's just say, 6 or 7 most influential staff members you have on campus. And what is it, the thing that they're working on this year that would just be like a wild success for them, a huge win? Figure that out. Then, as leader, help them achieve those things. And guess what? Then when you say, hey, I really could use some support on X, Y, and Z, they'd love to help you out. That's the law of reciprocity. And there was, you know, Zig Ziglar, you ever hear about that guy?
No.
Oh, okay. A while ago in the US, he was a salesman and then became like kind of a motivational speaker. He has some really great content. If you know Seth Godin,
yeah.
Seth Godin basically like memorized all Zig Ziglar's stuff and internalized it and it really influenced him. And I've tried to impart all of Seth's stuff in me. But long story short, Zig, back when there was radio, he would say everybody's favorite radio station is WII.FM. What's in it for me, right? So keep that in the front of your mind as a leader. What do people want? How can I help them get that? And they're going to do stuff for you. It's not hard. But I think it just egos and having blinders on and just thinking about what you want and the pressure of that gets in the way. It's natural. So if somebody's listening like, oh, that's me. It's okay. That's how everybody is. But
yeah,
that's why Will brought me on the show. Now you know. So stop doing that. Don't be stupid. We fixed it.
So I kicked myself and also rewarded myself through that conversation.
Great.
When we first started, the first 2 years when we opened the school, I wanted people to really feel that they were owning their role. And within that role, that they had ownership of the things that they could solve. And so I used to do the circle, and then you write in the circle everything that's in your control. And then outside of the circle is everything that's outside of your control. And then typically, whenever I've experienced that myself, that's it. Normally, it's like a piece of paper and it's like, yeah, now we're kind of connected. We actually then spent 15 minutes working through the outside on who might be the person that can help and who is likely to be able to solve those. So it's that idea of not necessarily over communication, but communicating how to be successful in the areas they can't control. And then also finding out what they see as being a real strength of theirs because they've put it inside the circle. So I was kicking myself because we've stopped doing that. But I actually just had a meeting this morning with our director of innovation. It was really empowering for me. I didn't say anything. I hardly spoke through the meeting. I literally just asked maybe one or two questions. But my major question was, what can I do to make this better? What can I do to help you? How can I create a team around you to make this even more successful? I felt really at ease on the fact that there's an ecosystem for someone to feel comfortable. He asked for the meeting last night at like 9 o'clock, set it up, having a conversation. Both of us walked out of that so incredibly energized because we actually realized that both of us know what each other needs and wants, but this is actually most likely going to help every single faculty member in the school. And so it's that idea of such a massive win from such a small win to start with, which is creating the space for people to share what they're doing. The big thing for us at school, I think it's such a challenge, and especially for leaders, is kind of the flip side of when you were saying, like, if people don't know, then how are you going to be able to help and how are things going to be achieved? So much of what you're talking about, that trust element, is finding the time as a leader to get into the weeds with your people. It's really quite hard because as soon as you do well in something, there's something else. And leaders constantly, we're not getting things taken off our plate. Our plates are just getting bigger. And we're tending to now shovel things in because before we could cut it into small bite-sized pieces and get through it. Now it's just like, how can I empty that plate before the end of the day, before it gets filled up again? And I understand the idea of burnout. I've gone through it. I think everyone's gone through it. And it's a real narrative that's in education at the moment.
Definitely.
How much do you think stress that teachers consume and have to live with actually significantly influences the student and the culture of the wider school?
Obviously, it impacts a lot. But I think the hard part to the answer is people need to take folks, they're going to like turn off the episode after this.
Go, I love it. Let's go.
People need to take some responsibility for their stress. There's things that they do or don't do that contributes to that. Again, this is back to in and out of your control. The wildness of whatever administration's running stuff, the policies, you don't control any of that. The kids that come, maybe if you get to select your students, but public for the most part, it's the neighborhood or whatever, you can't change any of that. But you can change if you're eating well, if you sleep, if you invest in social relationships, if you sort of unplug, or are you just scrolling on social all the time, this kind of stuff. And plus those algorithms, they're created to give you more of what seems to keep you engaged. And usually that's stuff that makes you outraged, which just makes you stressed. So to me, I like to try to keep that stuff away as much as possible. And then I'm pretty happy because I'm sort of not plugged into the matrix. So yeah, folks need to take some responsibility for that. I love to say that it's when it comes to taking care of yourself, it's about yourself. It's not about the district or the system. It's about you. So it's your responsibility, you know, self-care. It's not called school care or district care.
Yeah. And the question seems quite simple to at least think about an answer, right? Is it's an immediate yes. The stress that a teacher takes into a school is obviously going to affect the ecosystem and therefore the students as well.
I got a 10-second story on that.
Yeah, go. Yeah.
So I'm listening to a parenting podcast, doing yard work, mowing the lawn, you know, just cleaning stuff up. And I figured, well, if I learn from this guy and what he's talking about, maybe somehow I'll learn something about kids and students and be better. And essentially, he was just talking about all the crazy stuff his son does and how he responds. And I was like, the insight was, oh, I do it the way he used to do it. I need to do it the way he now does it. So old Danny, kids would say, I'm not doing your homework, or this class sucks, or they would just make a request, like, help me with my locker. And I'm like, it's almost the end of the year. Why don't you know how to open the locker already? And that would actually make me mad. You know what I mean? And then there'd be this tension in the classroom and stuff. I'm embarrassed to admit that, but sort of like how I impacted the culture, I'd write up Kit. You know, there'd be this fight that didn't need to exist. So once I learned these phrases and kids would be like, oh, your class sucks. And I'd be like, probably. And they're like, what? Probably? You're the worst teacher. That could be. And it was all these sort of like middle of the road Jedi responses.
Yeah.
The insight was that I wouldn't jump on the emotional roller coaster for them because there's nothing funnier as a student to watch your teacher lose their mind. They're supposed to be in control. They're the adult, the role model. And I was at times losing my mind. Then I did the middle of the road, all the stress, everything was totally changed the dynamic of the room. And I'll never forget this girl, Tiana. So she's the class clown, funnier than me, if you can believe it, right? She was hilarious. And she had a habit of now having an insight. She was never on time for class. But
did she turn up with a cookie?
She didn't. She always came in with like a dance and like some kind of skit. And the hard part was, Will, I would also laugh because it was legit funny, but it would disrupt class. So at times that could be stressful too. But once Tiana came and she was like, Mr. Bauer, I can't get my locker open, but I learned my new phrases. And one of them is not taking responsibility, right? It wasn't my task to solve her locker problem, but I used to think it was. I'd get upset about that. So I said, oh no, Tiana, and I meant it. And then I said, what are you going to do? And there was a pause and she looked at me in the eyes and she said, I'm going to go back. Can I try again? And will you not give me a tardy if I come back, you know, whatever? Well, she comes back, got the locker open. She comes back first time in the entire school year. She just walked straight to her desk and sat down.
Yeah.
And that was the day I lost my mind the first time. It was amazing. And didn't have to write her up.
So the thing that I love about that as well, and this goes back to the trust component. There are two elements here that I think intertwine so much, right? Is the teacher really understanding how they can impact a student through words, and then also accountability and responsibility in both areas. And on heart, I definitely take on other people's self-care concerns. I'm definitely a body language person. If I see someone with a little bit of a slumped shoulder walking down the corridor, I'm definitely the type to ask, are you okay? Why? What can we do? And that does lead into more challenging conversations sometimes and things like you said that almost feel like they're an outside the building thing, but they do influence the building. And that's where I see it as my family is the building. So trying to work that out. But the student story is so interesting. Like as a teacher, when you can actually build a rapport and understand each student, how quickly behavior and things like that just become a non-issue.
Disappear.
Yeah. And it's the idea as well is it's always like, well, I'll just send it to the principal or I'll send it to the head of school or let's send them to the dean. I don't want to deal about this. But then what that happens is there's such a shift in owning the classroom. It's like as soon as the teacher does that, and as soon as the teacher pushes the stress outside of the classroom and doesn't try to handle it themselves, there tends to be that break between the rapport and the love of learning. And there's a real kind of correlation between those actions and success in a classroom. The unfortunate thing is so many degrees, teaching degrees in particular, they take care of behavior management through policy. They go, if a student was to do this, send them to so-and-so. And they don't actually give them the tools or even the strategies to think that they have the responsibility is like, you can manage that. But I think shifting back to where we started that conversation of trust in the classroom and stress for teachers, a lot of that is also influenced heavily by parents. So parent expectations on the student, parent expectations on a curriculum, parent expectations on a teacher's performance, and also the school's responsibility to get them into whatever college or ever any profession that they came into the school with an ambition to achieve. And so let's say you're in charge of my communications and we send out a Sunday mailer that gives all the information to parents. If you could, what would be one, two, even three questions if you have to, that you would ask parents to ask themselves to influence the positive ecosystem within a school?
So I guess I'd have parents ask, there's a story, you know, Sarah Blakely, do you know her? She's the founder of Spanx, if you've ever heard of those.
Yeah, I know them.
Shapewear for women.
Yep.
And she attributes a lot of that success to her dad asking her and her brother around dinner every night, what did you fail at today and what did you learn? So maybe that's question one. Maybe question two might be something to the effect of how'd you grow as a person? And then maybe if we borrowed from the EPSP journal, just like, where'd you put in effort today? So trying to unchain the kid from, is it on the test? What do I have to do to get the A? Like, no. Did you put in great effort? You know, and I think combining those, did you put in effort? How'd you fail? What'd you learn? How did you grow as a human today?
Love those questions. I'm actually going to put them in the Sunday mailer.
Yeah, steal them.
I'll reference you. I'll say, from our chat with Danny, here's some questions.
Nah, you don't have to. I would like to know, though, how they respond.
Oh, yeah. And the good thing is our parents are pretty good at responding to those type of things. So I'm going to put them in. I'll send you a screenshot. I'll actually send you a copy.
Yeah.
So you can see, and then I'll give you some of the responses. And so you work a lot with leaders and leaders within schools, but leaders in other spaces as well. But let's focus on the school side of things. From who you're working with, had a great story about the California teacher that definitely sparked my interest as well. But the teachers that you're working with and the schools that you have been able to at least do a little bit of a deep dive on, what gives you the greatest hope about where some of us are going and where schools are taking our students?
The leaders are just like you. Well, they're clearly passionate and bought in to the vision that they have for their campus. So that gives me hope. And for whatever reason, they pick themselves, and whether it's individually or in our sort of like group mastermind community, they're getting support. The job is hard doing it alone. I don't know why anybody does it that way. And so what gives me hope is I know that they have the support. They're asking all the right questions. They're dreaming big. They've found a space and surrounded themselves with people that don't say, oh, that'll never work, or that's not how we do it here. The people that they put around themselves are saying, well, okay, that's a great idea. How can we make it reality? So I hope that's good enough answers. The hope comes from just seeing them living out what I call their do school different vision. And it's cool. The interesting thing about that too, and when they're focusing on the inputs, what's in their control, I've stopped counting the number of awards that they win or distinctions and all that kind of stuff. It seems like that they follow that process and they get the recognition. So they're doing great work out there and their students are thriving, parents are happy. So yeah, I'm proud of that.
It is, especially in my position. It's such an incredibly rewarding job.
Yeah.
Hard, and there's a lot to it, a lot of complexities. And as you were talking about, like losing your mind in a classroom, you've got to try, in this position in particular, you've got to stay as calm as possible, even if the feet are pedaling underneath the desk. And I do love that idea of what you were saying is creating a team and creating people that help share the vision and also help get to the end goals, even though those goals and aspirations may seem unachievable in some spaces. I see such an incredible future in education, and I think there's so many amazing opportunities that are untapped. And I get really excited at the fact that I get to talk to you. There's people that are all around the world that are really working every single day to try and have an impact in a school setting and on leaders to be better, because obviously with better leaders creates better schools. But my last question before we wrap up is more around your self-leadership. So you gave me some great insight. I went and actually looked at some of those award-winning stories that you told me about and the books, and I read those things. And one, again, I can't believe how successful he is, and those storytelling pieces are amazing. But I'd love to just flip it to you and go, what are you doing for your own leadership? Who helps you? Who do you rely on? What do you think you need to potentially grow in as a leader? Is there anything in that space that you'd be happy to share with us?
Yeah, sure. Support, you know, I've worked a number of times with Matthew Dix, who's a elementary school teacher, and he's the storytelling guy. So
yeah,
I enjoy that relationship. He's legendary and great. Business-wise, two mentors I'm really quite close with still, Christopher Lockhead, Eddie Yoon. And they brought to industry this idea that's called category design. And actually, I've taken a lot of what they taught and adapted some of that stuff to schools. And this will be a 10-second version. But the way that many schools sort of advertise that they have a vacancy, it's so bad. It's just like really just garbage. And by using category design, which essentially is about what is the problem you solve, what makes you different, and lean into that, that's just a way better path to attract people. And folks that I don't have time to dig into it, but folks that have applied that thinking have solved sort of like teacher recruitment issues, which is really pretty cool. So Lockhead and Yoon, and they have their own little community, and I get coaching from them. Got a therapist, so that helps me sort out the human being type stuff. And what do I want to work on? I give my team a lot of, you were talking about teachers and autonomy. My team has a lot of autonomy, which I want to continue doing, but they're all still employed as well in schools, which is great because the coaches and mentors that coach and mentor our clients are on the front lines. But that makes it difficult for us to find time to get together. I mean, I hate meetings in general anyway. But I've realized in my own leadership recently that my communication and what I'd like to see happen hasn't been as strong as it needs to be. So quick case study, I've cloned myself, Will, with a digital Danny, believe it or not. And you can do that. And he's trained on 5 million words of content that I've created, podcasts, books, blog posts, newsletters, etc. And he's an incredible resource because if you worked with me, there's some sort of investment of time and finances. Digital Danny is like way accessible and available 24/7. He never gets tired. But we've done a poor job rolling out and communicating that it's available. And so I was thinking, I can't be in every mastermind group that gets run. But when a leader like Will asks a question, yes, everybody there, human being, live, should answer, but they should also ask Digital Danny. So I told the team, do this, start this week. It's a new idea, but I want you to implement it. And Dan Watt, who's a coach up in British Columbia, he's like, Danny, we did it. And he gave the best answer ever. And I was like, yeah, of course. But like, how cool, you know?
Yeah.
And now the people we serve are going to see him more and they're going to start using him when they need him. But then I'm going to talk about it to the larger audience and invite them to work with him too, if they want. So basically, I sucked at communication, got real lazy, and I want to get better at that.
Yeah. So I just want to check. This is real Danny though, right? I'm talking to real Danny?
Yeah, for sure. This is the real Danny.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I was going to say that's a pretty awesome job if you've got digital Danny talking to me.
Yeah.
I think it's, again, it's one of those things, isn't it? That communication, you end up, so we talk a lot about it, that communication is the creator of solutions and the creator of problems. And the funny part is that you tend to like get to a point where you feel like you're over communicating sometimes. And then as soon as you start under communicating, it just starts to create this real challenge. But I could talk to you for hours.
Yeah, same.
I love the fact that you create this space for us as leaders. I love my job. And I think that there's so much potential that's in middle leadership at schools that I think I'm just really worried that if we don't create the joy in leadership and let them know that the rewards are kind of endless, even though the work can feel a little bit endless, I really hope that we start to find new ways to celebrate people. The hiring thing that you spoke about as well, we've constantly looked at that every year. We ask very, very different questions now than what we did 2 years ago or even 18 months ago, to be honest. And a lot of it at this school is you still, because of the traditional aspect in so many areas, you have to kind of put the title that people are familiar with. But then most people that have come into our building, the title they came in with doesn't exist anymore because we actually write the title to the competencies and capabilities of the person. And so we create a role that they're going to be successful in rather than a role that's going to silo them off and they need a digital Danny. Their administration and their communication is probably not their best thing, but their classroom work and their rapport and building synergy at a school, it's unrivaled. And so you create a different thing and you call them the Dean of Student Life. And they're the person that's just bringing the joy into every single student spot. And you take away the parts that they don't thrive in. But really, I want to thank you for your time. It's a shame this is a podcast and it's not just us where we can roll on for another hour or two. But I do really value your time. I love the work that you do. And yeah, thanks for being on. I really appreciate it.
100%. My pleasure. This was great, Will. Thank you.
That wraps up this episode of Franklin Unlimited. A big thank you to Danny Bauer for sharing his honest insights, practical wisdom, and deep commitment to helping school leaders and school communities. As we've heard today, when adults feel supported, purposeful, and empowered, students benefit in powerful and lasting ways. And of course, thank you to you, our listeners, for tuning in today. If today's conversation piqued your curiosity or gave you a new perspective, be sure to subscribe to Franklin Unlimited so you won't miss future episodes as we continue exploring the leading edge of education. If you'd like to learn more about Franklin School and our mission to empower the next generation of leaders, visit us at franklinjc.org. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible in education.